Philippians 4:13. We're going to be in Philippians chapter number 4, and then we're going to be in Matthew, a couple different passages there. The point is I'm going to try to help you with something, all right? How many of you have ever heard of, maybe you've heard these terms used in church, you're not as familiar with it, but there's some different types of speaking, all right? There is a type of preaching which is called topical, and then there's a type called expository. How many of you have ever heard that terminology at least, okay? I'll try to explain it the best I can. Topical preaching is kind of a little bit what I'm doing this morning. Not completely, but pretty much within general, all right? Topical preaching is when somebody, this will happen for sure if you have a guest speaker at your church. They're going to come, open up the Bible, preach a specific passage, and then that's it, all right? We do that a lot here. So the goal that I'm trying to do this morning is not convince somebody one way or another. I'm just trying to help you explain something. Expository preaching is when somebody will take a book of the Bible, for instance, if we're in Philippians, and say, church, we're going to start in Philippians 1, and we're not going to stop until we're done with Philippians 4:23. All right? And we're going to go literally line by line by line. You know, the biblical terminology, precept upon precept. You hear that mentioned a lot sometimes. There's some strengths and some weaknesses to both. When I say strengths and weaknesses, I'm just saying there's some pluses and some minuses if you go either way. For instance, if you are a true expositor, a lot of times, like I've known guys that have said, I've been in the book of Matthew for a year and a half. I've been in the book of, I talked to one guy that said, I preached through the book of John. It took me over 3 years. And what would happen is we would come to church and you would know, okay, he left off on 1:7. So next week it's 1:8 and whatever happens. All right. What's the plus of that? The plus of that would be it can help avoid a lot of landmines from the outside world. What happens is you hear a lot of preachers where instead of trying to use what's going on in the world as illustrations to a Bible text, you know, pretty much if you're a true topical guy, it can be very dangerous not to watch the news all week and then on Saturday night go, I got to fix this, right? And that's what happens a lot of times. If you've been around topical guys, you've heard that. Topical preachers also, one of the things that can cause a little bit of a mishap is how many of you have ever been in a service where this happened? Okay, I know I've done this before. I'm thankful for areas of growth in my life, honestly. But where literally, open up your Bibles too. It's on the screen. It's right in front of you. Whatever. It's on your phone. Read one verse. Close the Bible up. Anyone ever been in a service like that? Yeah. Okay, I have. Usually those are the ones that appeal greatly to the flesh because the guy just goes crazy and off tangents and whatever. All right. What I try to do my best is the way I'm built, the way my mind works, I don't know. Like, we're going to be in the book of Acts starting next week. I can't do 28 chapters of the book of Acts for like 3 years. Okay, it's not the way I'm wired. So I will skip over a lot of stuff and go basically chapter, pick something and go. And if I preach the book of Acts in 3 years, it would be totally different because some guys are more built that way. I'm just not the way that I am. But what I've tried to do throughout the years and learn and grow is this. If I give you a verse and it's a standalone verse, it has to be a standalone verse, okay? Give you a great standalone verse, John 3:16. You can quote John 3:16 all day long. It's within the context of the passage that it's in. Literally, it's within the context, and it can stand alone, all right? Perfect. I'm going to share with you today three verses that cannot stand alone, that are totally great within the context of what we're living in right now, that will help us understand now more than ever we need these massive verses, but they're not the way you've been taught. They're not the way that you've been saying them, all right? The first one's right here on the screen. I can do all things through Christ. I've seen fighters have it tattooed across their chest, okay? I've seen ball players have it tattooed somewhere. I'm not making fun of those people, because the guys that have a tattoo across their chest could do a lot of things and make me be in a rough shape, right? Like, I mean, so I don't want to make fun of them, but here's what I want to say. They portray that verse, and you have had that verse portrayed like this. Ah, got a job interview today. Don't know if it's going to be a good one. I can do all things through Christ, right? Like, I've got a test at work today. I don't know. I can do all things through Christ, right? Have you ever heard that verse used in that context? Or here's another one, and I asked this morning, and almost every hand was up. How many of you have ever used that verse in that context? My hand is up, okay? Here's the thing. Is it the worst thing in the world to quote a Bible verse? No, it is not. But, all right, it is very important that if we quote a Bible verse, we know what we're quoting and why we're quoting it, okay? So in Philippians chapter number 4, verse number 8, Paul says, "Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, noble, just, pure, lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there's any virtue, if there's any praiseworthy, meditate on these things." I kind of forgot to mention to you, I know a lot of times I use ESV. These verses, because I've used them out of context so much throughout my life, I grew up learning the King James Bible, all right? So for me, the New King James is probably helpful helping you, and it's also been helpful for me in this type of sermon, all right? Because these verses that I've learned out of context, I learned in the King James, all right? So, you know, the things which you have both learned and received and saw in me, do, and the God of peace will be with you. But I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again. Though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, how to abound and to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Nevertheless, you have done well with that you shared in my, what's that last word? Distress. Okay? So, is this coming across as Paul on the basketball court about to shoot the game-winning free throw? Right? No. This is coming from a man who says, I'm in distress. I've had to learn to be content. All right? This, again, I'll share the story. Many people have a variety of takes on wearing a mask and whatever. You guys want to have that debate today? You want to just talk about that? How about no? Okay. We'll just keep sharing articles that keeps coming out every other day where they all change their mind, right? And so we go through, but when it comes to these things of wearing a mask, some people it does not bother them. They can wear, I know some of our people in the morning service, I know Richard told me he has to wear one for like 10 hours or whatever. Some of our people, for their job, they're forced to wear it. I am thankful because I personally don't know if I could. When I wear a mask, honestly, I have a hard time seeing sometimes. It pops up. I don't know if it's just in my head. I have a hard time breathing a little bit, not like, you know, I'm going to pass out. I don't feel good. Like personally, I have a hard time with that. And so it was our anniversary about 10 days ago. And we wanted to go to a restaurant for the anniversary. They finally opened them back up. And we go in the restaurant. And basically, when you hit the restaurant door, there's signs everywhere that basically say, if you don't have a mask on, just get out, right? Like, I mean, they didn't say it that way, but it pretty much did. So put a mask on. You walk in. People in gloves, masks, and there's signs everywhere. Sit here, don't sit here. There's arrows with tape everywhere. Like if you got to go to the bathroom, this is how you get up, and you go here. And if you get out, you when you sit down, you can take your mask off. But when you get up for anything, put that joker back on. So we walk in and we put it on, and there's a guy we always knew. He's a waiter. He's always been great with Bob. Who we knew him. And I saw him, and it had been forever since we saw him, so I went, you know, like you do with, hey, what's up? Well, forget. No one can tell who anybody is anymore, right? So I do that, and he just goes. Now, when someone looks at you like that, that's scary enough. When they've got a mask on, it's even worse. And he's just like, and then he goes, oh! Sorry! Can't tell who anybody is anymore. Well, he came over to our table at one point. We're sitting down, and we're both there sitting down. There's food and stuff. Him and the waitress are talking to us, and I don't know what it is. I just got this feeling. I can't explain it. And they're there in gloves and wearing them. And then you stop and you think, you're like, maybe this would have been good in a restaurant before. I don't know. I don't even know anymore, right? Like, I don't even know it's normal. But they're coming through, and it just, I don't know, didn't feel great. We went to a couple stores after that, same thing. And the second store we went to was a retail store. And, I mean, literally, who used to shop by people you didn't know side by side anyways, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, hey, man, I'm getting these pants. What are you getting? Like, at least guys didn't do that. I don't know if ladies did, but it was like you always kept a distance. Well, literally, we're walking through this store and trying to wear this mask. I'm having a tough time going through, and everyone just keeps looking at me like, what are you doing here? You know, get out of my way. If we get within 5 feet of each other, we're all going to kill each other type look, right? It was like just like angry at each other. Like, yes, we all are here. We all don't want to be here, you know, just like. And so finally I'm like, I got to get out of here. Like, I just got to go. So we get in the car, and out of nowhere, I'm having these, like, all I could think is these old movies of, like, when the lady's about to give birth and they're teaching her how to breathe, like, you know, you know, like, whatever. So I'm just, like, in my mind, I'm like, am I supposed to breathe that way? I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Like, I'm just trying to breathe. And literally, like, we got back to the church, because that's where we had our car separately. We went our separate ways. She left, and I apologized to her later because I tried to keep it quiet or whatever. I just sat in my car for 25 minutes. Like, I just had this. And then I'm talking to people, and I'm like, hey, have you ever had some? It was the first time in my life I've ever had an anxiety or a panic attack of some kind, all right? Like, I did. And some people will be like, oh, suck it up, whatever. Okay, look, I'm trying. I don't know what happened. It hasn't happened since. It hasn't happened before. But something happened where that caused it. Like, I don't know what it was. I don't know how to fix it. I don't know how to change it. And then whenever I would try to talk to people, and even sometimes I still do, like, hey, have you ever had something like this happen? They're like, you need to get used to the new normal. I'm like, listen, I don't want to have a talk about the new normal. I know what the new normal is, okay? I'm not trying to fight it. What I'm trying to tell you is have you ever had something like this happen? And if you have, how do we fix it, or what do we do? I don't want to hear another speech about the stupid new normal, okay? I don't want to hear another speech because no one knows what the new normal is, all right? A year from now, we're going to be wearing full body suits. Who knows? Who cares? I just want to know how to handle when I have an attack like this. I want to know what happened. If it happens again, I want to know how to deal with it. Is this something that's now come on my life? What do I do, right? Happened, like. So I'm trying to talk to people. I asked people in this morning service. I'll ask you guys. How many of you in the past few months have had a time where it may not have been as severe as what I just mentioned, but throughout everything, you have had a moment where you felt like you were about to lose your mind? In this morning service, every hand but one was raised. Okay? Where literally, like, it just, for whatever reason, you know, don't know what it was, don't know what it is, it's just bam, okay? From what I could tell, a huge majority of hands went up today. This verse is not meant for times of success for our lives, as it is to say when we're in moments of great anxiety, when we're in moments of great pain, when we're in moments of great distress. That's when we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. When we're in times when we don't think that we can make it, that's when we can do it, not because of who we are, but because of who our God is. This is not a verse that is meant to have us jump through joy, through victory, and say things like, as we have a building fund or whatever, you know what, we can do all things. Let's just go out and let's claim this verse. And let's. It's not meant for a prideful thing within. It's meant for a humbling thing to say, when I am at my lowest point, that's when I can do this, not because of who I am, but because of the Christ who strengthens me, and through him all things are possible. And that's so key for us right now, because I'm telling you, as everything that has gone through, through a church, we're going through things that are not normal. Churches weren't meant to wander from week to week if they're going to have a service. They weren't meant to be online one week, and then the next week, three services, and then two services, and then 20 services, and then however many services, and then, right, it wasn't meant to be. So when we go through these things, where we go through these times where we don't know of uncertainty, it's not meant for a time of victory. It's meant for a time of humility within us. Because basically, as a fighter, if you had that tattooed across your chest, what you're really saying is this, not, I can do all things, knock this guy out. What you're saying is, I can be knocked out and be fine. That's not a message that you would like put on your chest as a fighter. Okay? Like, I can be knocked out and through Christ, I can do this, right? Like, that's not the message. But do you see how a verse can be taken out of context? Okay? I'm going to give you another one. Great verse. Everyone knows this verse. You don't even have to go to church and you know this verse. Judge not that you be not judged. Question. Everyone in here probably knows Matthew 7:1. Who knows Matthew 7:6? Anyone know Matthew 7:6? Okay. It's only five verses away. Why don't we know that one? Okay. Do not give what is holy to the dogs. Nor cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under your feet and turn and tear you into pieces. Well, Pastor, that's probably like a metaphorical thing. It's not actually talking about people. Okay, let me give you a newer translation that people sometimes laugh. I laugh when they're like, they try to weaken things. Okay, here's one of the new weaker translations, okay? Don't waste what is holy on people who are unholy. Don't throw your pearls to pigs. They will trample the pearls, then turn and attack you. Question. The same Jesus who said, don't judge, also said, don't waste what is holy on people who are unholy. How many of you feel like in your life you know one of these two groups of people? You know the guy over here who is just, whenever it's his turn to talk, listen, guys, we're not supposed to judge. Okay, and all of us want to say, listen, bro, we're thankful that your wife finally allowed you to talk. Okay, we're thankful that she let you speak up, but get a backbone and learn the context. Okay, and then we've all gone to church with this guy. This is his mantra. All right, everywhere he goes, he's trying to make sure he's not wasting holy things on people who are unholy and casting pearls before pigs. Here's my question for you. Again, both verses can be rough, but let's go back to the first one. Was this verse meant to be used in a way of whenever I see wrong, I always shut my mouth and I never say anything? If it was, I firmly agree with Mark, then how five verses later is the narrative totally changed? I see Christians all the time online saying and doing the dumbest things, and they'll take a verse like this, and they'll be like, we're not supposed to... Listen, first of all, I would say this. The conversation that you're trying to have, don't have it on an online forum. Have it privately with people, first of all. Second of all, don't throw in a verse and make it worse. Don't throw in a verse and be like, look, we're not supposed to judge. Look, I'm in agreement with you because I believe the Bible. But I also believe all of the Bible, which says that we are supposed to stand for truth and righteousness. What does the Bible teach us? Well, keep reading. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. What it's teaching is this. However you judge other people, that's how you are going to be judged. I have pastored people that previously attended churches that were very judgmental and harsh. Do you know how I know? Because all of conversations that should have been handled privately were handled publicly. And because of that, that was the judgment that was used on the people. And intentionally, those people learned that that's how they're supposed to judge their pastor back. Because eventually the people that sit take it until they build it up, and then they're like, you know what, I'm going to give it right back. And then you sit there and go, well, what happened? Well, what happened was the way you treated other people eventually got treated back on you. It doesn't feel good, does it? Doesn't. How many of you know people that are very lonely, and you can't really say this? You're like, I shouldn't judge them. Oh, stop it, okay? I tell you what, why don't you judge everybody like you judge the person that you dislike the most? How about that? Yeah. You're pretty good at judging, aren't you? All right? So we all are. But you've seen people that are very lonely, and you think to yourself, there's a reason why they don't have any friends. It's because the judgment that they keep using on other people constantly keeps coming back to them. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye but not consider the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me remove your speck from your eye and look at the plank that's in your own eye? Hypocrite. First remove the plank or the beam, that I learned it, in your own eye, then you can see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Then we get to the verse that says, don't give that which is holy to the dogs, nor cast your pearls before swine. So, literally, what we often do is we're more worried about everybody else than ourselves. Okay? So before I fix your marriage, I've got to fix my own marriage. Because here's what happened. I use this illustration in the first service because some of the people in our church, Eric and Karen, started running. Yesterday they got Britt involved, and Britt said she went 5 miles, Eric and Karen went 10. And I asked them, I said, when you started to run, did you get advice from somebody who was out of shape? Like, hey, You spend your life being able to tell the difference in Lay's potato chips without even having to look. You can just put your hand in and, like, you know, it's like, you know all the flavors. Like, you just put it in there. But can you do me a favor? Can you tell me? I've never ran a 5K. Can you tell me how to do it? You don't do that. Where do you go? You go to people who can be of help to you. Many times as Christians, God already knows we have a built-in problem with the beam and a speck. That's why he mentions that within ourselves. It's not like, hey, if you so happen to someday have something in your own eye, it's like, no, listen, you're broken people, you got issues on your own. But here's what he's trying to help and show us here. If you want to be used of me to be a blessing to the world around you, you can't constantly walk around with major issues and then tell other people how to fix their own life. Okay? Like, until we figure out how to properly fix the issues within our own church, what are we doing caring about the business of a church down the road? Okay? Some of our own business. We've got our own problems. We've got our own issues. We've got our own whatever. All right? So a lot of times the reason why people don't know how to properly help those around them is because they're constantly, when it talks about they're misjudging people. They're coming to false assumptions. What does a judge do? A judge makes a final decision. Only God can do that. We're judging motives. We're judging actions. We're not getting to the heart of the issue. And then on top of that, we are a train wreck ourselves. And then we're trying to tell people, you know, hey, Tom, here's what you need to do with your kids. As I'm thankful my son had clothes on today, okay? Like, so what I'm trying to say is, like, you got to make sure that before you have discussions with people, you're coming from the right place, and you yourself aren't walking around looking like the bozo that's a self-righteous jerk, all right? We've all met people like that. And when that happens, is the love of Christ coming from somebody? when they're being a self-righteous jerk? No. When someone has come and said, hey, look, man, I want to help you. Here's the deal. Let me show you how in my own eye I used to have this beam. This is how I removed it. Let me help you with yours. This verse was never meant, friend, for us to sit there and go, oh, the world around us is going to hell. We're just not supposed to judge. Oh, they're trying to redefine marriage. We're just not supposed to judge. Oh, we want to make infanticide legal? Well, we're not supposed to judge. Oh, the rich people want to make sure the poor people get stuck in bad school districts? We're not supposed to judge. We're not. We're not. So you're trying to make everybody bad? Yep. But don't get mad because we're not supposed to judge. Okay? You and I both know that's not true. But what we're supposed to do is understand that when we start to talk on these issues, our marriages are strong within our own church before we start to talk about the world outside of it. That we care for life in our church from beginning all the way to the death before we start to talk about issues of life with people who we tell them, hey, you need to have the kid or else it's sin. By the way, once you have it, we're going to leave you destitute and not help you out. Okay? It's wrong. Hey, the love of money is the root of all evil, but make sure that you file your taxes the wrong way so you can get all the money back for yourself. Okay? Right? Like, what are we doing? We're not supposed to be that people. We're supposed to be people that are constantly standing for truth. But let's focus on ourselves first. And let's realize that before we start to get outside of who we are, let's focus on who we are before we start trying to fix the world. But also, this verse was not meant to have us just sit back and never speak and go into issues. You can't take Jesus out of context. I laugh all the time. Not because I think it's funny, but because I just want to shrug my shoulders. People will say one thing that Jesus said. This verse is one of the key ones. And I'll go, oh, hey, the same guy that said that said, if you don't eat his flesh and drink his blood, you can't follow him. The same guy that said that said, if you don't hate your mother and father, you can't follow me. He said that? Yeah. Look up the proper context and you'll be okay. That's a whole nother, I'm just saying, like, I want you to understand, like, Jesus said those things. So the same guy that said this said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and the only way to get through God is through me. He said, I am. He's saying, I am God. I am overall. So the same guy that said, don't judge people, said, I'm God, and if you don't follow me above all, you'll spend an eternity away, separated from hell. Whoa! All right? You can't just take one verse and use it to your own advantage. Here's another one. All right? We've all done. This one is like the absolute toughest one for us. Okay? For where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there in the midst of them. How many of you have used this one in this context? Well, it's okay if church is closed down. I mean, as long as there's two or three of us in our house watching it online, we still have church. Me. Okay? How did that happen? That happened because it's a great verse, all right? But it was not meant to sit there and go, hey, even if everybody else leaves and it's only Nate and Brant, Jesus is going to be with us, bro. Don't worry, because where two or three are gathered in my name, I'm going to be in the midst of them. This verse wasn't meant to justify pathetic church, okay? This wasn't meant to be like, we're sad, we're a joke, only two people show up, and because of that, though, Jesus is here. Like, us four and no more, but Jesus said, if two or three are there, all right, that's not what this verse is for. This verse is actually in regards to this, all right? In Matthew chapter number 18 and verse number 15, it talks about this, all right? Matthew 18, 15, there's parables all throughout Matthew. First of all, we talk about the parable of the lost sheep. Then we deal with the sinning brother. Then it goes to a parable of unforgiving servant and how we're supposed to forgive those around us, all right? So right in the middle of that, the Matthew 18 principle pops up, which says this: moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. But if he will not hear, take with you one or two more, that by the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he refuses to hear them, tell it to the church. But if he refuses even to hear the church, let him be to you like a heathen and a tax collector. Assuredly, I say to you, whatsoever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatsoever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Can you hear my Everith, all that language coming out? Like I told you. And again, I say to you that if two of you agree on earth concerning anything that they ask, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there in the midst of them. Okay. Question. How many of you heard or were taught that that verse regarded being involved in church discipline? Most people probably not. What this verse is teaching us here is this. If your brother sins against him, you go and tell him his fault alone. If he hears you, you've gained your brother. If not, you take somebody else with you. All right? Brant, can you do me a favor? There's a green t-shirt in the sound booth there. This was not meant to be a prop, but it will be. I used it in the first one. So what it's teaching is this. I know Jesus knows us. He knows that the hardest thing that we do is to talk to people in times of distress and in times where we're afraid of the reaction that we're going to get. The hardest times for you is when you're trying to talk to somebody in regards to a corrective thing and you're worried how they're going to take it. Am I not telling the truth? Okay. So what Jesus is saying there is, I am here where two or three people are there. There I am in the midst. He's giving them comfort, letting them know that when you are together having these tough conversations, that's where I am. He's saying to the husband and the wife as they're dealing with issues, and if you haven't dealt with issues as a married couple, you're not really married. I'm just going to put it out there right there, okay? You say, how'd you make it to 15 years? Yep. So you go through, and you're going to deal with issues at times. You're going to deal with struggles. You're going to deal with things. And there's going to come a time when you're like, I don't want to have this conversation. I don't want to have this conversation. And Jesus is saying, like, hey, I'm in the midst of that conversation. Like, I'm there with you. It was never meant to give pathetic church a jumping for joy like fight song. Like, you know what I mean? Like, hey, there's only two of us here, but God's here. Boo! All right? It was never meant to be that way. It was meant to say, hey, when you're dealing with times of trial and with getting people around you, it's tough. I found this from a book. They call this the Matthew 18 principle. All right? And I want to read this to you. Few of us debate the biblical position on truth-telling. Speak the truth in love. Don't bear false witness. Lay aside falsehood. Speak truth one to another. We agree in theory that honesty is the best policy. It's the key to authentic relationships. But in those awkward moments when we stand face to face with someone, knowing that they may readily receive the truth, truth-telling doesn't sound like such a great idea. Right? I can't tell you how many times I've called my wife on the way home, and she'll be like, did you do it? What? Nate, you went over there to talk about, did you do it? Well, here's what happened. I went over there, and I don't know if you knew this, but the Tigers are only playing 60 games this year, and it's going to be, and we were there, and a half hour later, I just had to go, and she'll be like, Nate, how did you only talk about the Tigers for 6 years? You went over there to talk to them about a something issue that's affecting our family, and you talked about the stupid Tigers? I'm sorry. When I got there and I actually sat down face to face, Everything I thought of in the car just wasn't worth saying. Am I right? Oh, yeah. Like, and it's like, but here's the problem, okay? When I found this article, the saddest part about this, I'm going to give you some stats that are unbelievable, all right? And this came from a doctor and some different schools they were going through. This was a mega church years ago, all right? So they had the opportunity to do that. We know that in our church we have a literal Karen, okay? How many of you have seen the memes, the Karen memes, okay? So when I made the joke a few weeks ago about Karen, you know, and I found a meme that after church, and it was one of the ones that was Karen. Well, Karen, because she's Karen, she brought me this shirt today. Literally says, "Shut up, Karen," is what this shirt says, okay? And then she's got one that's like, you know, because Karens are notorious for going to the managers, and so her shirt has something along the lines of, "Nate, I'm going to go to your manager, Jesus on you," or something. I forget what it said. It was kind of a funny saying that she had made up. So she's like, "When you go to Brittany's party today, I want you to wear this shirt." I'm like, "Really? You want me to wear this?" I'm like, all right, cool. And so, you know, gladly. But it's just a joke here. So I use this in the first one. Karen's crazy, man. Thankfully, we only have one. The world only has one, right? And so, but she's funny, she's wild. But here's the thing, and I use this illustration as a joke. When I go to Karen, and it's one-on-one, which is what the Bible talks about here, the Matthew 18 principle, literally, this is in the church, out of the church, 4 out of 5 times it's solved. 4 out of 5. And then the Bible tells us that if your brother hears you, so if he or she hears you, you have gained your brother. Why? Because if I go to Mark and it stays with me in Mark, now Mark and I are going to be in battle for the rest of our life together, because I know no matter what comes up, he's got my back. Because we kept it together. Then the scripture shares with us that if somebody won't listen, so if I go to Karen and Karen won't listen to me, all right, and I go to Karen and she won't listen, I bring somebody with me. Here's what's crazy, all right? 98% of the time. So 80% of the time it's fixed at the first level. 98% of the time it's fixed at the second level. Why is it fixed there? Because most times it's two people that are heated and a third person come along and say, "Listen, I'm going to be the mediator. Here's what happened. Yes, he came to you because, you know, worried about this. I think we would both agree. Needs to get fixed. He maybe didn't do it right. Let's work together. Here's the deal. We're all on the same page, right? Let's go. Bam." In the workforce, out of the workforce, especially in the church force, we have a biblical principle here. 98% of the time. 2% of the time, the reason why the wording here says, look, if they won't listen to that, you go to a bigger crowd, then they won't listen. Look, I don't say this to be mean-spirited. It's honestly just the truth. There is a percentage of people in this world. There is no talking reasoning. There is no helping them. They literally, the only hope is that God intervenes at some point. There is no talking sense to them. We've all had people like that in our family, in our life, in our work, in our whatever. So 98% of the time it works. For that 2%, it's like, look, we did our best. Here's where the truth is. If you want to come back to it, we're sorry. But there is that. So listen, 98% of the time, if you do it the right way, it's fixed and nobody knows about it. Yet, why do we always follow the 2%? Okay? That's a question. Why do we always follow the 2%? Why do we follow the 18%? If I just talk to them on their own, could it be because we don't hold true to the fact of Jesus' promise of when I talk to that person, I'm going to be, Jesus is telling us, I'm in the midst of that. Could it be because we're more worried about finding comfort in somebody else? Could it be that instead of just properly calling and talking something that seems simple and could have gotten fixed so easily, now has become just this cloud of crazy? I say that for this, as our church and what God is doing in our church is unreal. I'm going to share something with you in a minute that is like, I cannot believe it, what God is doing in this church. Like, just different stuff. The testimony we shared earlier, the things that's happening. Things have been happening in the last month that have not happened in this church since year one. There are people that have attended this church for years that haven't seen some. I'm getting phone calls that are like, God's doing this in my life. I mean, it is unreal. Like, here's the thing. And this is where I've had to learn and repent, and I'm speaking to our church, and I talked to them earlier and us in this later service. In times past, we've tried to make some changes. We weren't in as healthy a spot as we are now. But people refusing to follow this principle just about sunk us. All it takes is just something very small, and it can create an atmosphere of just chaos and confusion and conspiracy theories and, you know. And we all have conspiracy theorist friends, and the past 2 months have been the greatest months of their lives, okay? And we're thankful for them, and I just like, and sometimes I'm like, dude, I used to think you were really crazy. I don't know if you're as crazy as you used to be, you know? Like, it's just like it's as wild as it's been, right? And look, all it takes is a little bit of that and a misproper handling of a few situations, and you have got an absolute mess. And what I'm saying is that a verse like this is meant to give you comfort in the fact of, when I'm going to have a tough conversation, Jesus is there. And if I know it, and Mark knows it, that Jesus is with us, man, how different are we going to act with each other? I say this sincerely. Nobody likes to point out another brother's faults to try to help them. Those that do fit the Matthew 7:6 category, right? Like, we've all met those guys where it's like, I don't think offending people is a spiritual gift, but if it was, you would gain the medal. Like, you know, you would get the most crowns when we get to heaven because you are awesome at that, right? So most people, the reason why Jesus, I believe, is sharing this because he knows most of us, we don't like that. Nobody likes to share with their spouse something that their spouse has been doing that caused them harm they didn't know. Nobody likes to share with their kids how their kids hurt their feelings. Nobody likes to share with their friends. Nobody likes to share with the pastor. Nobody likes to share with a brother or sister in the church. Nobody likes to do that. And to be honest with you, it's always very rare. But when it comes up, you have to have the guts to say, Jesus, I'm going to serve you and I'm going to cling to this verse. Because it's meant as a time of comfort in a time when you're struggling. Again, we've had some very low days in our church. And we've probably clung to this verse falsely a few times. Not the worst thing in the world. But Jesus wasn't trying to give us comfort when we only had 7 people in the building, okay? That wasn't what it was meant to be. And so I'm going to go ahead and pray, and then we'll share some announcements. Father, we thank you so much for today. Lord, I pray that you would be with our church and just keep working, guiding, directing. Lord, I pray that you would use a message like this in a time of need. Lord, this may not be the moment in someone's life where they need any one of these 3 passages, but we are in a time and a place where at some point it's going to. And Lord, I just pray that you would keep working within our church. We thank you so much for everything. We thank you for the blessings we're going to share. We give you praise. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.